Welcome, Lund loyalists, YouTubers watching on John Lund Unleashed and the Bay Area Sports Collective, those watching on X and Instagram and listening on Apple and Spotify. It's John Lund Unleashed and johnlundunleashed.com. Brought to you by RioPel Cosmetic Surgery and Laser Center. Right now featuring amazing stem cell technology. For all your pain and for the guys, check out the latest in low T and testosterone therapy to make you feel like yourself again. RioPel Cosmetic Surgery and Laser Center at RioPelCosmetic.com. Now, all juiced up and ready to go. Here's Johnny.
Yes! What a wonderful Saturday. Or excuse me, Friday. Actually, it felt like a Saturday because it was opening day and I was down at the yard. I have a lot of good videos and stuff for you. I got the walk-off hit from my angle last night, or yesterday, I should say. And good morning, good morning, good morning. Thank you for taking time for episode 107. As you can see, John Lund Unleashed and the Bay Area Sports Collective on this Saturday. Wearing the old school John Lund Unleashed hat today. Good to see you. I will do roll call momentarily. If you are new around here, thank you, thank you, thank you. Maybe you're watching for X on the first time at John Lund Radio, and you're like, what's this stuff all about? Head on over to YouTube. Make sure you subscribe. Please subscribe. Give us that like. That helps the algorithm, and it's like, oh, that's good stuff. All right, so it will help us in terms of growing the community, which has been great so far as we've grown this community in just a short while on John Lund Unleashed. So we're on John Lund Unleashed on YouTube. Come on over here and join the community and make sure you say hello this morning. A great community that we've built and are building at Bay Area Sports Collective on YouTube as well. So that way, what you do is you got my show, you get Tom Tolbert's show on there as well. Plus you get Polymax Particles, which is Polymac from KNBR in the morning show for 4 years. And you get Creative Tony, plus I talked to some people at the ball yard yesterday, and we might be adding some stuff, which would be very exciting, but I'm not at liberty to tell you that. But we're always growing the Bay Area Sports Collective, so make sure you go over to YouTube, check that out as well. We're on Facebook. You can hit me up there. My personal page, just John Lund, or John Lund Unleashed. Please, let's grow that page as well. So we're on all the platforms, and for everything Unleashed, including, you can watch the show from there right now, johnlundunleashed.com, where we have I owe you a new mock draft, I guess I do, on Monday. So as we get closer and closer, we're 19 days away from the NFL draft. So I'm going to put another one of those up. And it's cool because you can see who is on the board. And you can tell me how screwed I am and you can mock my mock. And that's always kind of fun. But great day yesterday. And we'll get into everything that happened. And I should have done a double dip. A lot of people over at the yard did. They went from Giants to Warriors right away. And I'm like, oh, I should have done that. But other responsibilities prevented it. But it is episode 107 here on this Saturday as the Warriors beat the Nuggets 118-104, finally beating the Nuggets. And they are on fire right now. And so we'll take a look at the standings and where they might be able to go. Steph Curry to another level. And the other thing I forgot to put on the chalkboard, but I want to discuss, is Jimmy Butler has not only saved the season, Jimmy Butler has saved Steph Curry not being a former Warrior. And I'll explain that in a few minutes as well. The giant walk-off I have for you, I was right behind home plate in that media area that we have, and so we'll do that. Plus, I talked to Justin Verlander, both on and off the mic. Really cool dude. Also, Willie Adames. Had a chance to talk to Willie Adames for the first time, and Bob Melvin was all excited. So we got a bunch of stuff from the clubhouse. QB tiers, and I'm going to tell you again why Brock is going to get paid, why the 49ers purged. We got into a little bit yesterday, but I got a little bit more on that. And Trey Lance found a home. I didn't have time to put that on the chalkboard. This morning I was going through my notes. I'm like, oh, yeah, so we got to hit that up as well. And I really hope he does something. I really do, even though it really doesn't matter to 49ers fans. I don't know. I like the kid. And then we got random stuff, which we always go through random stuff as the show goes on. If you're new around here, we go off on tangents. We go off, as I like to say, on these off-ramps. We get a little McDonald's, maybe some gas, and we get back on the on-ramp. Sometimes it takes a minute. Sometimes it's quickly. Just don't know. So that's what we do. So anyway, what a great Friday. What an amazing Friday. And I can't tell you how much fun I had at the ball yard yesterday. So I'll tell you about all those stories as well. I got a lot of stories to tell. But good morning, good morning, good morning. I'm sorry I'm late this morning. What's funny about it is, before I do roll call, quick random thought or story. So my family, other than me, because I have work responsibilities and I cannot let people down on a Saturday, they had somewhere fancy to go this morning until this afternoon. And my stepson in the, do you remember tying your first tie? Because he's in seventh grade, and I had to do one of those things where I had to tie the tie, and then I had to put it over his head, you know, make it all nice, and then tighten it up. It wasn't that big of a deal. But I used to wear ties all the time. I've been an executive. I know that's hard to believe, but I've ran radio stations in different places, and I've had, you know, I've worn ties a lot in my life and suits. And those days are over, but I did. And so for a minute there, I was like, how do you do this? Oh, yeah, that's right. And then I did it and put it over him, and he's looking very fine. But so they had to get fancied up today. So we bought him a suit yesterday, and then he got all fancied up, and he's looking primo today. And so he's all excited because, you know, when you walk around, like, he got up first thing this morning, put the suit on. It's just a nice black suit, has this really crisp blue shirt underneath, looks nice. And then went with the black, like a thinner black tie. And he was, I mean, they didn't even leave till a little bit after 10 o'clock. And so that's what I was doing, getting him out the door while I was a little bit late. And, he was up at 8 o'clock threw the suit on. He was like, I'm loving this. And then he, you know, all throughout the morning, it's like, when am I going to put on the tie? When am I going to complete the look? And finally, like, right, I said, you don't have that thing like tight on you until like you absolutely have to, especially if you haven't worn a tie. You know, it's just like all of a sudden you have to do that top button. And it's like, if you're not used to it. So anyway, that's what I was doing. It was fun though. Very cool moment. So very, very, very cool. All right. So let's get to it. Let's say hello and good morning to everybody. Hello, Skills. Good to see you, Skills. Good morning to Skills Report. Francis is here. I think I got a tweet from you yesterday. AJ, good morning. Surfbone. Hello, Surfbone. Hello, Tommy. It's nice to see you. JP from the 510. Very, very cool to see you this morning. Jazz Fan, nice to see you. G Martinez. Hello, hello, hello. Richard DeLeon. Christopher, he is a Lund loyalist. Thank you, Christopher. Much appreciated. Daniel, oh, former Kings fan, sell the team now. Now he's very upset. Very nice. You're still a Sac guy, though. You're representing Sac. I was up there on Wednesday. I might be the only person who on Wednesday. No, John Shea, who I talked to yesterday. Wednesday at an A's game. Friday is at the Giants home opener. And I talked to John Shea a little bit about all that stuff. East Coast Red and Gold podcast. Please make sure that you are subscribed to East Coast Red and Gold if you're a Niners fan. If you're not, man, they're great people down there. So anyway, good morning. Hi, Pine Needle. Hi, Danny. Good to see you. Danny's in Arizona. Let's see, everybody. All right. Very nice to see everybody this morning. I do have a great show for you today. And on Saturdays, as you know, I try to do a tight hour on Saturdays so we can all get along with our lives. But I do have an absolute ton today, and it's led by right there. There's the show cover. Willie Adames in the walk-off. I was at that. And then by the time I got home, I went and watched the Warriors. And my wife's like, do you ever not watch sports? What is wrong with you? All right, let's start with the Warriors. And let me pop the box score up because it is very telling, although it doesn't tell everything. But there's some things on here that you got to give the Warriors a ton of credit on this whole thing. So first and foremost, look at the bottom. See where it says score by period? They gave 44 points up to the Nuggets in the first quarter. They're down 44-34. Look at the first quarter right there. The Nuggets come out rolling. They go 17 of 24 from the line. And you're thinking to yourself, really? Jokic, we talk about all the time, not wanting to see them in the playoffs because you just have no answer for Jokic. He goes 6 of 8, 3 of 3. He scores 15 in the first quarter. And you're down 10. And you're like, here we go again. Can't beat the Nuggets. God, I don't want to see them in the playoffs. Lund is right for once in his entire stinking life. This is just not a good matchup. Don't want to do this. No, 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 no. And then you look at the second quarter, and I don't know how you do this, but you go from giving up 44 to 16 to the Nuggets. You outscore them by 16. You right the ship. So let's look at the first versus the second quarter. So you got that going on. And then the second quarter, this team that was just red hot goes 7 of 20, 2 of 10 from 3. So they got 3-point happy in that whole thing. Not that the Warriors are great offensively, 13 of 29, 4 of 10. But still, you know, you outscore them. And then there's that guy, Steph Curry, goes 4 of 8, 2 of 5. He scores 12 points. Jokic only scores 2 after scoring 15. But again, to only have Jokic play 5 minutes. Yeah, thank you, Mike Malone. We appreciate it. So anyway, story of the game, that first versus second quarter where they go 44 in the first quarter, 16 in the second quarter, and outscore them by 16 to have a 6-point halftime lead. And then hang on to get the victory over the Nuggets for the first time, the Creamy Nuggets for the first time this season. And even though I still don't want to see the Nuggets in the playoffs, and I'm not a big person in terms of sending messages, like I tell you all the time, I still don't want to see Denver. But one thing certainly that you see there, and it's not like the bench for the Warriors had a great night. Kuminga didn't have a great night, only played 18 minutes. It wasn't like they were going crazy. But Denver's bench, especially last night, it's pretty atrocious. Because Russell Westbrook gives you very little at this point of his career. He only scores 5 last night, but it's all the other things that he normally does. And he wasn't good in just less than 20 minutes. So it puts an amazing amount of pressure on the starters. And Jokic is Jokic. He's amazing. He didn't even really have a great game. First quarter, he had 15. He only had 18 the rest of the way. And I know this is crazy to say for a guy who scored 33, almost had a triple-double, 33, 12, and 9, and you go, he was okay. But, I mean, that's his average night. You know, that's what he does. He's basically a triple-double every night. So after the first quarter, he wasn't great. Porter Jr. had a nice night, scoring 23 on 9 of 15. Aaron Gordon, who killed the Warriors, if you remember in that game, that they didn't have Jokic or Murray in that game, that was a big deal. So he wasn't nearly as effective. And as you can see by the starting lineup, they had Brown back, who didn't play in that game that they lost, and Jokic back, but they still didn't have Jamal Murray in this game. So that's going to make a big difference. There's no question about it, but I don't care. I'm just looking at the Denver bench, and I'm saying, okay, Westbrook's a name, and you're going to push, you know, Watson back if Murray is there. So he's a decent player. But still, you look at the rest of that bench, it's not anything that's great. Now, you look at the playoffs, and you know that you're not going to be playing on back-to-backs, and you're not going to, you know, so guys are going to be rested, so you're not going to need your bench as much, but you're going to need something, and Denver does not have a great bench. So with the addition of Jimmy was good, not great last night. Normally he's going to, you know, he was good, don't get me wrong, but 6 of 6 from the free throw line, again, the type of things when the offense stalls down, and he can do what he can do, but 6 of 13, 19 points, not bad. But again, Brandon Podziemski, and I don't expect this out of him every single night, but the other night he scored 22 of his 28 in the first half. And now last night, as you look, an amazing compliment. I mean, this looks like the Clay and Steph days when you looked at the backcourt and they just smoked your backcourt so badly. I mean, look at the backcourt of Denver, the starting backcourt of Denver. They scored 20 points. Look at the starting backcourt of the Warriors. What's that, 62, right? Am I correct in that? In that quick math, 30, yeah, to 62. So you outscored their backcourt 62 to 20. That's what the Warriors did when it was peak Steph and Clay type nights. So I keep saying, well, Podziemski's not going to do that. Well, he had 28, then he had 26, and that's a great shooting night. I mean, is he going to go 10 of 16, 4 of 8 every night? No, but a couple of times in the last couple of weeks, he set his career high on consecutive nights as far as three-point makes are concerned. So from the guy at the beginning of the season who just really looked like he had regressed from a solid rookie season, Brandon Podziemski is playing his best basketball. So if you look at the starting five, Moody just fits. We just know that. Jimmy Butler has saved the season. We'll get into that in a minute. Draymond's Draymond, Steph, and all of a sudden guys like Podziemski and Moody are stepping up. Buddy Hield is basically a heat check. Is Buddy on tonight? No. Okay, Buddy sits. Is Buddy on tonight? Yes. Okay, he plays more. It's like Mo Buckets used to be. So you got Kuminga. GP is just coming back, so that's going to take a minute. Looney's going to be, in some series, he's going to be important. In other series, he's just going to sit on the bench. I don't know how much that Steve Kerr is going to trust the young guys. He's going to trust Post to a certain extent because he can shoot the basketball and he can space the floor. So against certain teams, he may play in the playoffs. But all these other guys, they're not going to play. But I don't care if Murray played or not. I look at Denver and I say, I still don't want to play them in the playoffs. And I still don't really believe in sending a message during a season. But having said that, I'm going to contradict myself. That was an important win last night, I think, against Denver. So give me what you think and what you thought of the game last night against Denver. I just thought it was a really big opportunity to get a victory. I don't care if Jamal Murray's playing. I don't care if Russell Westbrook's old. I don't care if, you know, after the first quarter, Jokic wasn't, he was just good, not great, which he normally is great. But that's just a nice win for the Warriors last night. And if you go into a series potentially against them and you hadn't beaten them, how much would you believe you could beat them? I guess, as I contradict myself in saying that games during the season don't really mean anything. But I think that's pretty important that they got that victory. So let's look at the Western Conference playoff picture. Let me take a look at, let's see, where are the standings here? Here we are. I got a million windows open, so I got to get you the right one. There is the bracket, as I always talk about. So now, 46 and 31, so five games left in the season, and a lot of things can happen. They can still be anywhere, as excited as you are about this whole thing, they can be anywhere now from 3 to 8. Essentially, because if you look at them at 46 and 31, still one game ahead of the Clippers, who have the season series on you, and you play them to finish the season. Grizzlies are absolutely going to the bottom, and so they're 45 and 32, but still only a game behind the Warriors, so they could still be 8 conceptually. I don't think the Grizzlies have any gas left, but they could. As you sit them right now, they're still going to play the Nuggets in a 4-5 matchup. Now, what's crazy about that is you wouldn't love it, period, if you had to play the Nuggets, regardless of last night. But you wouldn't love it if they had home court, but you're only right now a half game back of Denver, and I've showed you their schedule. It's pretty easy, so I still think Denver is going to move up there. The Lakers have a tougher schedule, as I predicted a little bit before. I still think the Nuggets are going to be the three, and then it's going to battle down to the Lakers and the Warriors. Remember, the Lakers have the season series over the Warriors. So right now, as they're one game back in the loss column, they got to be clear of the Lakers by a game. Timberwolves win last night. So as jumbled as it is, and you're excited, and you see Jimmy, and we're going to talk about how Jimmy saved the season, and Steph has been absolutely amazing lately. And you feel like as the Warriors sit in the five hole, they could win a championship. They're going to give the Thunder or whomever they play in the playoffs, Houston, any of these young teams, the Lakers, the Nuggets, they're going to give them all they want come playoff time, especially these younger teams who I think they can intimidate once they get in. But it's going to be Thunder 1, Rockets 2, and then 3-8's up in the air. And as great as the Warriors are playing, they are just one game in the loss column above the 8, even though they're one game in the loss column below the 3. So 3-8 with 5 to play. It's absolutely madness. But the one thing that you can control, and this is where if I'm a Warriors fan, I'm excited, and I want to ask you this question, is just how you're playing. And so right now, the Warriors are playing such great basketball that, if I'm Memphis and I'm in 8 and I'm only one game in the loss column behind the Warriors, I feel like I'm 10 games behind the Warriors or the Lakers or the Nuggets. They're an absolute disarray. And so they're staying there and they're not out of this whole thing, but the Warriors, the way they're playing, I would just feel great about everything. So give me your thoughts on the Warriors. They get that win over the Nuggets last night. Is that a big deal to you? Or, obviously it's a big deal in the standings, but I'm saying if they match up in the playoffs, will this game matter at all? I tend to think not. But when you haven't beaten Denver for as long as they hadn't beaten Denver, and the last time they came into your building, they didn't have Murray, didn't have Brown, didn't have Jokic, and they beat you, that's kind of like, ugh. Now, obviously, we always expect this out of Steph, but look at this. Last three, 52, 37, 36, and just look at the shooting. Just absolutely amazing for Steph. And other than last night, had really been getting to the free throw line, very, very nice. And, of course, that Memphis game almost had a triple-double. So at the right time of the season, 37-year-old Steph Curry don't care. And you can say that this was because the Warriors played him less minutes or he's just in such great shape or whatever the case may be. But Steph has really stepped up his game. And I would expect in the playoffs it's going to be the same kind of thing. And just remember years ago where you could be physical with Steph or there was a way to neutralize Steph to a small extent. There just isn't anymore. There's just not a way. And I would look at Kevin Durant at 6'10", 6'11", whatever he is, and I'm like, there's just no way to stop Durant. There's no way to stop Curry either. Because now it's not only what he does, but it's just, Draymond running the offense the way he does. Jimmy Butler is getting on the same page. Podziemski's hitting a bunch of shots. And it's not like you're going to say, okay, because Podziemski's hitting shots, let's change our defense a little bit. It's still Steph-centric in terms of the way that they're going to defend Steph no matter what. But what it does is it just opens up things for other guys. And no matter what the game plan is defensively for other teams, they will, in their head, even though the coach can scream at them a certain thing, in their head, they'll be like, well, Podziemski just hit his last 2 threes. I got to go out and get that guy. And all of a sudden now you're rotating just a tick slow to Steph. And that's all he needs. His release is so quick that you just gave Podziemski just a little bit of defensive love. And then all of a sudden Steph's wide open for a three. That's what naturally it does. And then you add Jimmy's inside game where he can just get to the free throw line almost at will. He's not Harden-ish in that way, not quite to that level, but really, really good. Draymond's improved his offensive game to at least where you don't, where you don't have to give him the Tony Allen treatment and you don't cover him at all. I don't love when Draymond hits an early three in a game because then he'll miss three or four. I like him when he's wide open on a corner three. He likes the top of the key three as well. It can look ugly, but it's gone in a lot of times this year. So that helps everybody. So Steph has been absolutely red hot. But I expect that out of Steph. The graphic that, and you know this graphic, but I'm going to just pop it up on the screen anyway. The way that the thing that Jimmy Butler has done, he saved not only the season, but the franchise. As you said, Jimmy, as it says right here in this graphic, Jimmy Butler, 25-26, tied with the Kings for the 10th seed in the West. And since they've gotten Jimmy Butler, they're 20-5. I want you to see that in black and white. You probably know it, but it's just, they were 25-26. And Steph Curry was doing post-game interviews in a really glum fashion, and that's not Steph. That's just not his demeanor. But he was being very serious. He was like, look, I don't want to be on a mediocre basketball team. I'm not going to do this the rest of my career. The only reason I'm playing is to win championships. It wasn't really veiled. I was going to say it was kind of veiled in the way that he was saying it, but he was telling management. He wasn't talking to me and you. He doesn't care what the media thinks. He had a smile on his face, it wasn't the regular stuff. And he was saying to management through media, through iPhones and every other kind of device that he had in his face, through writers and all sorts of things, this isn't going to do it for me. That if this team doesn't get it together, I am 100% convinced that in the offseason, had they remained that 25 and 26 team and been where some of these teams are at the bottom, fighting for the final spot, the Mavericks, the Kings, that's where they were. They were that team. We all know that. That Steph Curry in the offseason, in the very nicest fashion he possibly could, through his agent, would say, got to move me. Like, I'm not demanding a trade. I'm not going to go out in public and say this. I'm Steph Curry. I want to come back to the organization. I want to own part of the organization one day or be the general manager, or I don't know. He's ownership material. I don't even think he's going to grind like a GM type. But Steph Curry is, I think, going to be a part owner of this franchise down the line. He's done that much. I'm not saying Joe Lacob owes him or anyway. Steph is royalty. And so Steph is going to be back with his organization regardless. Now, I think he's going to finish his career here now because Jimmy Butler is going to be here 2 years after this. And even if Steph slows down a little and Butler slows down a little and Draymond slows down a little, what we're starting to see with this team, and you know, I don't know what's going to happen with Kuminga, but they could bring back a nice piece for Kuminga and keep this thing going too. But Bajemski looks like he's a piece and Moody looks like he's a piece. These aren't pieces that are going to be the top player on this team. They're going to need that number one alpha male when Steph leaves. They still need that. I don't think Kuminga's that. So, but they've got pieces that if they can find the alpha males, the top guys, then Pajemski's a nice piece and Moody's a nice piece and Kuminga would be a nice piece. Although I think Kuminga could get you something bigger than that. And I might do that if he's commanding a max contract, which there's a debate now, whether he is, whether he isn't, whether that story was accurate or not, but I'm getting too far ahead of myself. But I think that Steph Curry in the offseason, had they remained that team that was hovering around 500 and like the last couple of years goes into the playoff game, play-in game, loses in the play-in game, Steph Curry's then going to his age 38 season going, what am I doing here? I've got oodles of money. I got money upon money upon money upon money upon money. I have everything there is. There's no reason to play and put my body through this unless I'm trying to win championships. And Steph's legacy is cemented. He's changed the game. Like, it's not, he's not even in a, like when people talk about legacies, it's already done for him. Like he can get the records, the 3-point records up there maybe so that nobody can touch them, or it would be really difficult for someone to. I still think someone will at some point, but I wrote an article maybe a month or so ago on JohnLundUnleashed.com about how difficult it is to catch Steph Curry as far as the 3-point record. So, but he's not the kind of guy that's like, you know what I'm going to play for? I'm going to play so that I can just make these records just so unobtainable. That's not him. And he doesn't legacy, whatever. His is cemented. I don't care if someone calls him the best point guard. I don't care if some jackass says he wasn't a point guard. I don't care if he's on a Mount Rushmore, and neither does he. I don't care if they have the greatest, the this, the that. Steph doesn't, it doesn't matter to him. He's a confident guy. He knows what he is and where he is. And you know what? If you leave the game and somebody calls you and most people call you and everybody calls you the best shooter that ever lived, that's pretty good legacy. And whether he wins one more championship, 10 more championships, or none, that's not going to change. He's the greatest shooter to ever breathe. That's what he is. And it doesn't matter. Other than that, it's like, hey, guess what? You're going to be the greatest shooter to ever leave. Is that a cool legacy to have? Yeah. I don't care about points and accolades and stupid Stephen A. Mount Rushmores and lists. I don't care. If I was Steph Curry, I would not care. And I know he doesn't care. I don't care about lists. I don't care about Mount Rushmores. Why the hell would he? He doesn't care. He's the greatest shooter of all time. Next. That's all you got to know. But he just wants to win championships. And so if they had remained below 500, got into a play-in game again, lost, he's going to Joe Lacob directly and just saying, look, man, we're going to handle this cool. You get the marketing department behind it. Hopefully you can get as much as you possibly can. I'm coming back to the organization at some point, but I'm going to go get championships. You don't have to, don't trade me in the West. You know, you don't have to trade me to the Lakers or somebody like that, where I'm going to come in and kick your ass and your fans are going to boo you and hate you. We don't want to do that. It's going to take some time. It's going to take some marketing. It's going to take, this is going to be very delicate, but I want to go win. I'd love to be a Warrior the rest of my life, but you know what? I'm going to balance that. And Kobe at the end, who couldn't win and had the Achilles, and that was ugly, but people don't remember that. But if he went and went chase championship somewhere else, he's not going to be like Durant. He's not a hired gun, but I think he would have in the offseason said, look, this is not how I'm going to end my career. I got a few more good years left. I'm not going to do it and just be here like a clown who you roll out and it's like, I'm here to just sell tickets. I mean, that's what he would have been. Look at the bearded lady, shoot threes. That's what he would have just been a ticket seller at that point. You know, he'd have been just like a clown act. Come out and watch Steph Curry shoot threes. We've won 15 games, but Steph's still here. That's what they would have done. He would have just been a marketing tool, and Steph Curry wouldn't have been down with that. And the Warriors would have had so much respect for him that they'd have said, look, this is going to suck, and this is going to be the most difficult thing we've ever done, but we're going to have to do it because we owe Steph Curry that. And he'll come back to the organization, but sub 500, you heard it when Steph was talking like that. You heard post games. He wasn't down with it. He changed his demeanor. And now all of a sudden, Jimmy Butler comes aboard, signs a 2-year extension, and they're 20-5 after being 25-26. So now, all of a sudden, and we showed you the standings before, all of a sudden, you look at the Western Conference, and I don't care. These guys just have casual conversations. They thought the Warriors were dead and buried. Like, they're going to play in the play-in game again. Don't have to worry about the Warriors. They're done. They're in the rearview mirror. Oh, not so much. They can win a championship this year. There's no doubt. I haven't looked at the odds lately, but they can win a championship, this team. Now, it would help a hell of a lot if they didn't have to play Denver, especially in the first round, and not have home court. I think that as great as things have been and as excited as everybody is, despite the fact that they beat Denver last night, they probably lose to Denver in a 7-game series. Maybe it's a 6-game, maybe it's a 7-game, but it's just tough to deal with Jokic. And like I said, 15 points in the first quarter, and then the rest of the way they did a pretty nice job. So I would be more encouraged after that, but still, I hate the matchup. And I don't love the matchup with L.A., the Lakers, although, as we talked about the other night, no Anthony Davis, put in Luka Doncic. Doncic makes them better long-term. Doncic right now, it's two ball-dominant players, and I'm watching and I'm seeing a lot of times either LeBron or Doncic stand around, and they're not standstill shooters. That's not the game they play. The ball's in their hands. So they're going to have to deal with that at the end of the season if they get knocked out earlier than they anticipate. I wouldn't be completely shocked if LeBron James was traded in the offseason, because you could get a boatload back. You could get players that are around Luka's age, 25, 26, 27, in the prime of their career, and now you're set for 10 years. LeBron's great. This is no dig on LeBron, but a guy who's going to be 41 next year playing with, you know, Doncic, who's still really, really young, like, okay, you can get a couple of years out of those guys and see what happens, even though they're not really compatible as players because both are so ball dominant. Or you could say, okay, we're going to move LeBron. It's not like moving Curry. LeBron's been kind of a hired gun his career as well. So you could move LeBron to somebody. You get a bunch of picks and players in return that are going to be better around Luka, more shooters and defenders and all those kind of things that complement his game. They're younger. And all of a sudden, now the Lakers have a 10-year window instead of a 2-year window. Anyway, you don't care about the Lakers. I get that. All right, Tony, give me your thoughts on the Warriors. So that's where we are on episode 104, 118-104 over Denver. Steph is Steph. Jimmy Butler has saved the season and maybe saved the franchise from Steph asking for a trade in the offseason. Showed you the standings, Curry at another level. So that's where we are with the Warriors. Let me make sure do I have any video of the Warriors today? No, I do not. Let me make sure I don't have any more cuts that I wanted to show you. No, I do not. All right, before I move on to the Giants walk-off, which I was at yesterday and had a lot of fun yesterday, I want to talk to you all about those things. By the way, good morning to Nick J. Good morning to Anthony. Hello, Chris. Very nice to see you, my friend. Papa J. Good to see you. Fiend, if I haven't said hello to you. Hello, Kenneth Contreras. Very nice to see you. Jake, good morning. If I did not say hello. Let's see. I didn't think we'd have a Nico Mannion today. Nico Mannion walks so Brandon Podziemski could run. Look, I like Brandon Podziemski quite a bit, and I'm not trying to soil anything of what's going on with what he's doing. I still would have traded him in the offseason. I still don't think he's untradeable. I'm just saying the kind of basketball he's playing right now next to Steph Curry, this is a legit team. Like, it's everything that's going on around this team. Curry's Curry. Jimmy Butler saved the season. Draymond seems revived, and everybody is, you know, it's going to be great. I'll tell you this, mark my words. This is going to be great for Draymond Green, and this is going to be great for the Warriors, and this will be great for the fans. When Draymond Green does not win Defensive Player of the Year and it goes to Daniels of Atlanta or OG Ananobi of the Knicks or somebody like that, he'll get on first-team all-defense, but I don't think he's going to win the award. I think it's going to be Dyson Daniels of Atlanta with all his steals. I think he's going to win it. He's just kind of the flavor of the year, and everybody thinks it's really cool what he's doing. So they're going to give it to him probably. And you're going to get a really motivated Draymond Green. Now, he'll be motivated in the playoffs anyway, but I keep telling you the story about Jordan and Karl Malone, and I covered that series in was it 97 or 98, both of them, but I think Malone won the MVP. Maybe it was 98, Malone won the MVP, but anyway. And then Jordan, every single press conference, would be like, well, I'm not the MVP, it's Karl Malone. And it's not that Jordan wouldn't have been motivated. I mean, it was the NBA Finals after all, and he knew it was his last run with the Bulls, but Draymond Green will just kick it up that much more when he's not named Defensive Player of the Year. And it's just gonna piss him off. And those are good things because all of a sudden it's just, like I said, Jordan had a level that was ridiculous and it's not like he needed the motivation, but he talked about it constantly in post games. He just, like, if you gave him a sliver to mention MVP, he would do it. And so it pissed him off and it just kept that fire going. And I think the same thing's going to happen with Draymond Green. So I bring that up because you mentioned Pajemski. The big three is the big three, but you start getting, you know, Moody, we know his record with the Warriors when he starts and how he compliments things. And Pajemski, the way he's played, especially the last couple of nights, getting the 28, 22 in the first half, and then last night gets 26. The guys coming off the bench, GP2 gets healthy. Everybody knows their role and what they're doing. This is going to be a really tough team to beat. Now, having said that, they're as close to eight as they are three. I mean, it's just absolutely crazy the way that the standings are. But anyway, there you go. Mark, I'm glad you brought this up. Was this Mark? Mark 187, Steph acknowledging Ayuk during the Golden State-Denver game. Man, you're good, because what this does is it allows me to play this video. So this is, check this out. This is Brandon Ayuk courtside. He was taking video. He's with his girlfriend. He's at the game. And this is straight from, this is what's great about today in the technology. Some of it, you're like, I hate it. Some of it's so cool. So this is actual Brandon Ayuk footage from his phone. And we have it the next morning. It's crazy. Here you go. Take a look. How cool is that in today's world that we could just be like, Brandon Ayuk was at the game courtside and he slapped him. We've seen that, the big picture, and they acknowledge BA being at the game and everything. But part of it, I guess, is his girlfriend's phone was the first part and then his phone was the second part. But I mean, how cool is that? He's just on the seat. I mean, those seats, by the way. I mean, I've covered a lot of games in my life and I've sat in, you know, media seats like that. But I mean, just to be able to, I don't think I've ever sat courtside in a game just as a fan, you know what I mean, with my feet on the floor. Actually, you know what, one time I have, and it was actually, this is a funny story, I don't think anybody knows this story, and I've never even told this story. So I was in Detroit, I was a pro, I've told you this, I was doing mornings, and I was a program director in Detroit, God, this is a long time ago, my son had just been born, so this is like 2004, and the Super Bowl was in Detroit that year. And it was Pittsburgh against Seattle. And the guy who was running KNBR at the time comes out because they needed a program director. Everybody, I think, knows that story. The program director got fired, crew got fired, but then came back. There was this whole thing that went on at KNBR years and years ago. And they had offered me the position at KNBR, but I was living in Detroit. And they had, long story short, was they just couldn't come up with enough money. They were the company was changing hands. They couldn't give me a in writing exactly what they were going to give me. It was just this complete mess. And so I couldn't accept the job, but they had flown me out there and KNBR had courtside seats and it was Lakers and Warriors and Monte Ellis. If he wasn't a rookie, he was in like his second year. Curry wasn't around, but it was Monte Ellis. And I was sitting courtside with the guy who ran, at the time, it's Cumulus Media now, but it was called maybe Susquehanna or somebody like that. Anyway, it was a different radio company back in the day when radio was rocking and rolling and making money. And I was sitting courtside at Warriors Lakers. Kobe was playing and Monte Ellis was playing. And to my left was Ronnie Lott. And to my right, about two guys down, was Mark Davis. And then there was like the guy who used to own the Warriors in the 70s. And I mean, it's all these bigwigs. And I'm like, I do not belong here. And that's the only time I've sat courtside, not as a media member of tons of different things, you know, court sides and everything like that, but never as a fan. I just remembered that I had done that. Jesus, good morning to you. Very nice to see you, my friend. Let's see. So anyway, there's the Brandon Ayuk. I played that for you. Where are we on the thing today? I want to make sure. Okay. Curry, another level. Giants walk off. Oh, let me give you the Giants walk off. So this was my view yesterday as the Giants have the best. Let me just give you, speaking of media, the Giants have the best media view in all of sports. It doesn't matter because most media places like the 49ers, you need an air mask or whatever. You're like, you're so high up and it's not bad. It's just, that's just where press boxes are. That's just where it is. But the Giants built a press box that is above the first level, but below the second level. And it's right behind home plate. So this is from the media area. It's the best press box in all of sports, because normally they're way high up, but theirs is perfect. So here is Willie Adames walk off from my viewpoint yesterday. You get the idea. I mean, I could play more of it, but it's just me. I should have probably cut that a little bit earlier. So that was very cool yesterday. It was amazing because I was putting out all sorts of tweets yesterday that, and I told you this yesterday, and I also told you this if you were with the show yesterday. Mariners had the best starting rotation in all of baseball. Obviously, Oracle Park is the toughest place to hit home runs and score runs in all of baseball, though it was an amazing day in the city if you were there yesterday. 65, sunny, amazing, awesome. And so the ball's flying out of the yard, all this kind of stuff. But I told you yesterday, I'm like, oh, low-scoring series. Mariners have a great best pitching staff, great best starting staff in baseball. Giants have pitched really well. It's going to be a low-scoring thing. And all of a sudden, we're watching this thing. And when it became 8-8 after just the craziness and the Giants, and I'll play Bob Melvin for you in a minute. I went into the clubhouse yesterday, talked to Bob Melvin, all those kind of things. And Bob Melvin did acknowledge, like, wow, this thing was a sloppy game. I mean, there was a couple of rockets, like 110 miles an hour, and Adames talked about it after the game. Hit at Adames that he, you know, some he could have made, some he couldn't have, but those were tough plays. Tyler Fitzgerald committed a big-time error. Camilo Duvall fell asleep on the mound and gave up a double steal in which both of those players ended up scoring. There was a wild pitch in the game. Like, they just didn't play clean baseball. And as I've said before about the Giants, if you're going to be a good baseball team and you're going to win a lot of games, you have to win in a number of different ways. So the rest of the series is probably going to be 2-1, 3-2, low scoring, all those kind of things. Now, I said that yesterday, and we just had a 10-8 game. So what the hell do I know? But normally, you're not going to be able to win those games. The Giants, because of their pitching, their bullpen, all those kind of things, they got to win 3-2 games, 2-1 games. But they showed in this park that they can win a 10-8 game against a team that generally has a pretty good pitching staff. But if Willy Adames is not in that spot, which they signed him in the offseason, do they win that game? And Ramos looks like he's for real. Before I give you some more stuff as far as the videos are concerned and going into the clubhouse, let me just throw their score up, or their box score up last night. Let's see. I got all sorts of stuff from the Warriors. Where's the box score for the Nuggets, Warriors? I know I have it. I know I put it up there. Come on, man. Oh, there it is right there. Boom. All right, so there's the box score from last night. So if you look at this whole thing, Wade gets 3 hits. He was struggling up until that point. Adames, 3 hits and 7 at-bats. Took out a couple of times, but it mattered. That's all that matters. Jung-Hoo Lee, even though, you know, you look at it right there and he's not hitting great, he has really good at-bats. He does battle. He does have great hand-eye coordination. So I'm not making any excuses for Jung-Hoo Lee, but I'm also not saying he should be out of that 3 holes. You're not having bad at-bats. Matt Chapman struggled a little bit with runners in scoring position. Look at Ramos. 3 out of 5, he's looking more and more like that guy that we've seen in the first half of last year, not the second half. Flores had opportunities. Yastrzemski had opportunities. Matos scored that first run as a pinch runner. Here's what's crazy. Look down here. See where it says Team RISP? I kept updating that throughout the game. I don't know that I've ever seen, even in a game like this in 11 innings, 28 runners in scoring position. They went 6 of 28, and that was the killer. Flores had opportunities late in that game, couldn't get it done. Ramos had some opportunities. Chapman had some opportunities. Adames goes 2 of 5. Yaz had some opportunities late in that whole thing, but 6 of 28 with runners in scoring position. Plus, they had an error, and Verlander just wasn't very good. I mean, I'll play a video for you from Justin Verlander, and I actually got a chance to talk to him away from the media just for a minute, and because I told him I covered his first game ever. It was a back end of a July 4th doubleheader in 2004, and I'm like, hey, I covered your first game. I'm like, that makes me old, but then I had a little conversation with him. Really cool dude. But anyway, he wasn't great. 2 1/3, 3 earned runs, 5 overall, but he just wasn't sharp. Threw 65 pitches and had a couple of rough innings. But there you go. That's what Justin Verlander did. So they got to be better. But I mean, look at all those pitchers. And they gave up, you know, Mariners don't have a very good offense. And I didn't send this out, but the Mariners had the 29th ranked offense coming in. They were averaging 2.57 runs per game. They were hitting 172 as a team, was Seattle. And I expect them to go much more towards that in the rest of the series. But some discouraging performances. Trevino is a guy that maybe you'd like to see as a seventh inning guy. He struggled. Duvall, he struggled. But again, a lot of it, in Duvall's case, defense. He did allow the double steal, but the defense wasn't very good. Eric Miller was able to settle some things down. Ty Rogers, especially when you're the Mariners and you just don't see him very much. Like, he makes me nervous against teams like the Dodgers or the Padres who have seen him a lot. Teams in division, but Seattle clearly hadn't seen them. They were just freaked out by the whole thing. And then you got Walker and Belbiv DeBivens. at the end makes me a little bit nervous. I know he had a great year last year, and it's a really cool story that he made it to the majors at 30. And because they had to play extra innings, that's who they had to put in the game. But he makes me a little nervous. But hopefully the bullpen, you saw a nice performance by Rodriguez. Miller did a really nice job. But we've been talking so highly about the bullpen that we're like, yesterday was not tremendous. But anyway, great win. And another thing that was really cool, and this was just kind of permeating through the clubhouse yesterday, was they just, all of them have this kind of sense about things that they're a good team. Now, it's early in the season. I understand that. These standings mean very, very little. But it does mean that, like, the Dodgers are just out to this ridiculous start. The Padres finally lost a game at Wrigley yesterday. Even Arizona, you know, Colorado sucks. I mean, how would it be to be a Rockies fan? I mean, I know we're frustrated at times by the Giants, but they're off to a 1-6 start. They stink. They've lost five in a row. It's like, there's 162 games in the season. You're already 1-6. You're already six games behind the Dodgers, and you're like, our season's over, and you're seven games into the season. How would that be? Jesus. I mean, honestly, I don't know how Colorado is ever going to compete because of the thin air. Nobody wants to go there defensively or pitching-wise, and it's like, my God, they are terrible. Anyway, that doesn't matter. 6-1, nice start. They've won five in a row. This division is going to be a mother, as we said, but you get all excited, and then you look at the standings, you go, God dang, man. These dudes, they're just a big pain in the ass. But anyway, let me start with Bob Melvin. So I was standing there about to the, the left of the place was packed for opening day. But here's Bob Melvin kind of putting into context, like we said, 6 of 28 runners in scoring position. Justin Verlander wasn't great. Some struggles defensively. Bullpen wasn't up to their normal standards for the most part. But Bob Melvin just said it was great to get a crazy win.
They didn't do some things right. It kind of went both ways, but for an opening day like that with a packed house, nobody left for 1 second, and seemed like there was drama every single inning, at least put on a good show.
You just have eight pitchers. What can you say about what the bullpen was able to do?
Yeah, it's a lot. I was gonna use Bird at the end, even though it's been one day off. So contributions across the board. You know, obviously we gave up some runs in some key moments, but just to stay after it and persevere through what is such a grind. And, you know, so many times it felt like we were on the verge and then not, and then you have to pick yourself up and go back out there and put the same intensity the next inning. And I guess once you sit back and look at that game, maybe it was supposed to end like that.
Yeah, so there's Bob Melvin after the game. You could tell, I mean, that's the cool thing about Bob Melvin. Very, very measured in what he says, and he was very honest. I won't play the cut for you because I'll just play a few of them this morning. But, you know, he was very honest about Justin Verlander's performance. I'm going to play Verlander for you in a minute just because, like I said, I think he's a great guy to have in the clubhouse. But it was really cool just in general, the clubhouse, and I don't know if you've seen the video. So you walk in there, and then they open the doors, and they all jump up and down and freak out again on Willie Adames. And Adames said it. Tyler Fitzgerald said it. I said hello to Logan Webb. Logan Webb said it. I say Verlander said it. I think Bob Melvin later in the press conference said it. Now, look, it's very early in the season, but I tell you this all the time. I don't like the term small sample size only because I don't really use that term. It's just, it is what it is. And then when things flow the other way, or if they flow, or inevitably they will, because over 162 games, you're going to have ups and downs. That you just ride this and say, look, right now they're playing really, really well. I don't care about small sample size. They're not playing perfect. Now, early in the season, it is early in the season. A couple of games ago, they hadn't committed any errors and the bullpen was perfect. It's not going to do that. You're going to have certain games like that. Am I surprised it happened at Oracle Park against the Seattle Mariners? I am. I found a note in the middle of the game. I just went through it. They were 19-0 last season when they scored eight or more runs. So I looked up that note when it was 8-8. I'm thinking, they didn't lose a game last year over eight runs. I mean, it's just, there's no way. Usually the magic number is four for the Giants. They get four runs, they win like 75% of their games, 80% of their games. And you just don't normally see those kind of runs. It was a nice day. The wind was blowing a little bit out. I wouldn't say it was warm, but, you know, 65 in the city with the sun. It was really nice. It was a beautiful day, perfect day for baseball. But anyway, so that's what Bob Melvin said about it. Let me do Verlander first. I mean, he was really, really cool after the game, but here is Verlander saying that, look, he didn't pitch very well, but he gave a lot of love to the fans. And he does mention, he goes, I've been in this park before. And he was obviously making a mention to 2012 when Pablo hit those three home runs to Verlander. So here is here's Justin Verlander after the game.
It really was, yeah. But I'd like to have done better. I appreciate the fans cheering me on the way off the field, too. Yeah, you know, The atmosphere was great. I've experienced it from the other side, obviously, in some big moments, and know how great these fans are. So, you know, a lot of the guys here told me how special opening day is here for San Francisco, and it really was. The atmosphere was wonderful for the short time I was out there.
Justin, after you left, it was obviously during the game. Did you ever take a walk back out to see that wild game that was going on?
No, I just didn't. It's early in the season, but this team has won a couple different ways. So far, I wouldn't say about this team to be able to, in a game that features so many twists and turns, to be able to find a way to win. Yeah, good question. You know, good teams find different ways to win ball games. You know, you can't just win one way and sustain that over the course of the season. So, you know, today was a big slugfest, and we were able to pull it out that way. You know, so it's just like I said in spring, man. This team has something special, and I think we were kind of overlooked. And you know, it's early, but I think you can see that this team is pretty good.
All right, so there's Justin Verlander. Yesterday, did have an opportunity, too, to talk to him a little bit afterwards. Seems like a really good dude. And like I said, I just went up to him and went, I just want to make sure that I have this right. I remember, because I was in Detroit doing mornings for years, and I said, your first start was, you got called up, and it was a second part of a doubleheader on July 4th in 2004. And he just looked at me like, oh, my God, like, really? You know that? And I'm like, dude, I covered that game. And he's like, oh, my God, you got to be kidding me. So we had a short conversation, but really good dude. He likes he's adjusted well to here. He's glad he came here. As he said to the assembled media there, he really was impressed by opening day. And he actually made a reference to 2012 and said, yeah, I've been here when the crowd is pretty good. So he goes, I remember that it's a pretty good crowd. And then I didn't follow up with, yeah, when Pablo hit those two front home runs off you, I didn't want to say that because then he would have smacked me in the face. But anyway, really good to talk to him. And then he had that theme at the end of that conversation, as you heard with the media there, where he said, you know, we're being overlooked and all these kind of things. And they kind of have that vibe in the clubhouse about that whole thing. And so, you know, if you look at just yesterday's game, and I get it that it's only one of 162, but I was saying this yesterday, that you can't just be a team that wins 1-0, 2-1, 3-2, 3-1, those kind of games. Because as I look at the Giants, that seems to be that kind of a team that they're going to pitch well. I think the bullpen's going to be better. I think Verlander's going to be better. All those kind of things, he's got to be. But they win a game in which they didn't get great starting pitching. The bullpen wasn't exactly nails. It was against a team that came in averaging 5 hits a game. The Mariners were averaging 5 hits a game. They had a batting average of 172, were 29th in runs scored at 2.57. There's only 30 teams in the league, people. 2.57 runs, and they explode for 8 against the Giants. And you think to yourself, well, the Giants aren't going to win a game in which they give up 8 at home. Well, they turn around and they get 10. They get the key hit from Willy Adames at the end. They were 6-for-28 with runners in scoring position yesterday. So they commit an error. They commit a couple of dumb plays, like Duvall just completely falls asleep, allowing a double steal that takes them out of a double play, and those runners later score. One on a pass ball when Sam Huff was in the game because they took out Patrick Bailey because Bailey was being pinch run for in the ninth inning. So a lot of things went wrong for the Giants. They're not going to win games in which they give up 8 a whole lot of times, especially at home. It's a really bad offense for the Mariners. So all these things, you're thinking, there's no way they're winning that game. But they find a way. They score 10 runs, and the right guy is up at the right time in Adames, who you give all this money to. So for opening day, it becomes pretty much the perfect storm. You end up winning it, and then you hear Verlander after the game say, look, man, there's just something. Now, maybe that'll be stupid by the end of the season, but maybe there is something to it. Here is Willy Adames, caught up with him after the game, and Willy said that Willy describes his game-winning hit.
How did that compare to your previous at bat? Because you had some much bigger swings in the previous
at-bat. I felt like I was, you know, taking good swings in the previous one. Felt like I just missed the one I popped that up, but you know, felt like I was right on it. It's just like, that's how baseball goes, you know. Sometimes it goes your way, sometimes it doesn't.
But the next time you try to shorten up a little bit, go the opposite.
Yeah, just try to put the ball in play. Because, I mean, like I say, the shadows were crazy. You couldn't see the ball well. But, you know, obviously we would just try to tie the game and continue to fight. And, you know, fortunately got the win.
I think he brings up a great point. People forget this. At that point, and you can see in the video that I shot of the game-winning hit, you can't see the ball until it's like halfway to the plate. That's why all of a sudden, you know, everybody's how come early in the game that they're scoring all these runs, and then at the end the shadows had crept in by that point because of all the pageantry before the game. So they introduced, you know, it's the home opener. So they're introducing all the Giants, and John Miller's out there, and they're doing this and they're doing that, and there's all these different things. And so for a 12:35, it didn't even get started till after 1 o'clock. And so at that point, the shadows are coming in. It's really difficult to see, all that kind of stuff. The other thing that I really thought was really cool, this is short from Willie Adames after the game. Now, remember, he's played in Tampa. That's a terrible ballpark. I don't know if you've been there, but it's just an atrocious ballpark. And now it doesn't have the roof on it, and Tampa's not going to be playing there, but it's an awful – worse than the Coliseum by far, just a terrible place. So it's not like he had a great atmosphere when he played there. Milwaukee, it's not that it's not a great atmosphere in Milwaukee. It's just a smaller market, and they're not going to be every single night having 40-plus. So Willie Adames said yesterday after the game, this is the best home opener he's ever been a part of. Take a listen.
I mean, there's nothing else you can ask for. That was unbelievable. Probably the best opening day I've ever seen so far. So, it was incredible. And energy-wise, you know,
now, every guy after the game said that. Every single guy, whether they were with the media or whether or not. Like I said, I went and said hello to Logan Webb, and that was the person. He's like, dude, how about that energy? Like, that was awesome. It's very, very cool. So anyway, guys were liking it. The energy in the clubhouse is really cool right now. They feel like they are something. Now, we'll see. The Mariners have a really good pitching staff. You're probably not getting 10-8 games the rest of the weekend. Your starter is going to have to pitch much better than what Justin Verlander did. I'm not discouraged by Justin Verlander. That was just a rough outing, but you kind of put a pin in it because he's 42, coming off the neck injury, hasn't been effective, really, really effective in a couple of years. So you just kind of watch what he does, because he is seen as your number two starter right now. Robbie Ray, remember those first 15 batters last time out? He was absolutely great. So you got to watch Ray and see what his bounce back is here. And then from there, Logan Webb is going to be Logan Webb, but I can't exactly, as we talk about putting things in the bank, I can't exactly put these guys in the bank just yet. But as we go through the chalkboard, the Giants walk off, heard from Verlander, heard from Adames, telling you about the clubhouse. So that's kind of where we are in this stuff. And I'll get out to the chat line, whether you went to the game or whether you have a vibe on the Giants or how you're feeling about it. It was really cool being at the yard. I'll be 100% honest from a personal standpoint. You probably don't care about this, but Papa and I had been, like I said, we'd done opening day for probably, I don't know, 8 or 10 straight years from this certain spot right next to the Giants dugout before the game. Players are coming up. And so I went onto the field and I stayed as far away from that spot as I could, that a bunch of people were coming up to me going, hey, come on over, say hello. And I'm like, nah, I'm cool, man. Like, I'm cool. So it took me a minute. It was a little bit awkward for me for a second there, but then it was just like covering a game. So just so you know, I'm going to, just from a personal standpoint, my goal is now that we're doing the show from 8 a.m. to 10 a.m. every single day, Monday through Friday. Got a lot of stuff to do after the show. Want to make great stuff, and we always send out shorts and videos and the story of the day. And so that's why you got to have your alerts on at johnlundunleashed.com on YouTube. So we put a bunch of stuff out. We probably put out, beyond the show, we probably put out 3, 4, 5 pieces of content every single day in addition to the show itself. So please subscribe. Keep that content on, or keep those alerts on, and you'll get all that stuff on our YouTube channel, John Lund Unleashed. But in addition to that, because I don't have a daily show that I'm having to prepare for and go in and all that kind of stuff, this is my studio at home. What I'll be able to do now is go to, I'll be at all the Warriors playoff games, home games. I'll be at the Giants home games, doing all sorts of stuff. Not every single game, like the rest of the weekend I'm going to take off, but I'll be at a lot more games. I'll be able to give you a lot more insight into the teams and talk to the players and everything. That's one of my goals, because when I first got into the business, as I've told you before, I was a beat reporter for the Utah Jazz, and I was a sideline reporter for the Jazz Radio Network. And I moved to Portland and did, pre and post game, pre half and post for the Blazers Radio Network. And so I was a reporter for a lot of the years in my early days, both as a writer and as a broadcaster. And so I'm going to go back a little bit to those kind of days and not only do a show like I do every day. It's not going to change the show. It's just that I want to be able to give you more stuff like that and more insight on stuff like that. And I hope it's something that you'll enjoy. And then we'll put it across all of our platforms. So John Lund Unleashed on YouTube, but I put it on Instagram yesterday. I put it on X yesterday. However you want to follow, put it on Facebook yesterday. So whatever your platform of choice is. And like I said, putting it right here on YouTube is what we'll do a lot of, so that you can get a feel both here, and I'll put it up on Bay Area Sports Collective under like a Giants tab or a Warriors tab or whatever. So hopefully that'll be cool for you, and we'll be able to get you some more stuff and beyond the pure entertainment, of course, of the show. Yeah. And by the way, I think I was the first one to call John Dickinson boots on the ground. And I did talk to John Dickinson at the game yesterday, but John Dickinson boots on the ground as I first called him. And then it was stolen from me. And just so you know, I didn't know this. In MLB The Show, they incorporate the shadows to seem impossible to hit at Oracle Park. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like at the end, everyone's sitting there going, everybody's looking around in the press, like, how come they can't score? They scored, you know, 16 runs between them in the sixth inning, you know, in six innings. I'm like, look what's going on down there. Like, these dudes can't even see. The ball gets to the plate. Halfway there, they can pick up the ball. It's like, could you imagine picking up spin on a ball, or, you know, where a ball is? Or it's just, those are bats were brutal, man. Brutal. Pine says, I see it differently. I see it as a very, very important one of 162. And you might be right, man. You might be right. You know, these are the kind of games where there are 162 of these things. There are going to be injuries. There is going to be adversity. There is going to be this, that. There are going to be really tough road trips, those kind of things. So maybe we remember this, maybe we don't. But to your point, Pine, you'll see players in any sport throughout a season, and they will go back to a certain game. And what it does is it instills, to your point, it instills a belief in that they look back and they say, we've done this before. Now, what I think is you've got to do it on a consistent basis to believe that you can do it time and time again. But this is where it starts, to your point, which is, hey, you know, remember that game against Seattle and we were very resilient and we just kept coming and kept coming and kept coming and we won it. And that can become a theme throughout the season. Like, I remember there were some A's teams where, you know, they were doing, like, Reddick was doing the Spider-Man suit and they were throwing stuff on each other. And that became kind of a thing. And they became a theme of their season became, we're going to come back. We're going to come back. We're never going to give up. And that has to start somewhere. So you bring up a really good point, which is, okay, we did it against Seattle and we did it against this team. We did it against this team, did it against this team. And that's kind of a life thing too, not to get too deep on you here, but in life that happens. So if you've been able to resiliently get through things, this happens to me all the time, and I'm sure it happens to you. You know, you have a bad situation in your life and you go, I've been through far worse, man. You know, that's just where you get seasoned in life. Like one of those pans. It's like a seasoned pan. You're like, look, man, I've done this before. I've been through this. I've been through that. I've been through this. I've been through that. And I've been through worse, and I'll get through this too. And so from a sports perspective, you do have to build up that callus. Like, you have to be calloused. Like, I we've done this. We've come back in the fourth. We've come back in the ninth inning. We've come back in the, you know, depending on what team you are, like, whatever, whether it's whatever sport it is, we've come back in the bottom of the ninth. We've come back with 2 minutes left in the fourth quarter. Because if you've never done that, then how do you know? Like, Joe Montana with 2 minutes on the clock is like, I do this all the time. Like, what's the big deal? Everybody relax. I got this. So yeah, that's a good point. Francis, you bring up a hell of a point too. And I saw this afterwards on social media. I think it was on Twitter or X or whatever. And they showed the umpire. Yeah, it was brutal, brutal, brutal. And I had, like, this is how I watch a game. So I've got it right in front of me. Then I have a computer on a baseball savant thing, and you can see all the strikes and the balls and everything, because from behind it, you can't always see it. And then I've got a box score over here. It looks so stupid. I've got, like, three devices going on plus my phone, and people are just looking at me like, because you only get one spot. Like, you're in the press box, you get one spot. And so I got, like, this stuff all spread out, and everyone's next. And the guy finally sat next to me, like, in the sixth inning, was like, is there someone sitting here? I'm like, I got to move on my devices, you know, but yeah, I right away you could see it, because if you watch it on certain websites, you can see it. And then as it's going, you can see the percentage of calls missed. Wasn't great. That was not a great umpired game. I'll tell you that right now. Let's see. Nick J says, Melvin being allowed to manage without Farhack running by is great firing. Yeah, it does. I would agree with you, Nick J, on Farhack. Hi, Caesar. It's good to see you, man. Hello. I would agree with that. And under Buster, and this is one thing that is, and I didn't talk to anybody about this yesterday, but it certainly was a vibe that was going before the game, because I told you I did an hour show yesterday, and because I had to run out and I wanted to catch Bob Melvin in the clubhouse, or excuse me, in the dugout before the game. And players, as long as it's hours before, and especially with opening day, because what you do is you walk down this hallway and then through the dugout onto the field. And so you'll see players, and they're all excited for opening day. And so they'll say hello to you and give you a second or something. If they're not in the cage or something, you say hello, hey, good to see you or whatever. And they just, there's a vibe there. You know, there's a definite different vibe without Farhan that Buster has instilled in that. Not, again, don't get me wrong, in terms of the analytics of the game, it's not that. It's just, they're not totally driven by those numbers. There's not all these readouts going, this is it. I mean, the guys are still getting that information. I'm not saying that. It's just that Bob Melvin, as you point out there, Nick J, is probably more able to say, I got a gut feel here. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that. And whether that wins or not, I don't know. But it is definitely going to be more of a feel to it. Not that they're going away from analytics. That's not what I'm pointing out. You'd be stupid to do that. But Kyle says Giants are rolling good. Rockies did go to the World Series. Yeah, 07 versus the Red Sox. But right now, I don't know what they're going to do. I mean, that place is a mess. Absolute mess, man. Yeah, the Chris Bryant deal. You can tell when Farhan, after, you got to give Farhan credit for this. Basically, he's like, oh, he's going to have a big market, and we're probably not. What do you get, a 7-182 or something, or 6-182 from Colorado? What a horrible, horrible. I just got a text message that said, hello, the bikini you wore was very beautiful. Which mall did you buy it? Okay, which one of you guys sent me that? That's funny. Very nice. See, this is a good community, people. Very good community. That's what was surprising about last night. Like I said, I was watching. I'm like, wait a minute. The Mariners had the worst offense in the league last year. I know it. And so I looked at their 24 numbers. But then what I did with all my stupid devices that I was watching the game on from the press area yesterday was them this year. And I know, again, we're not very far into the season, but they were hitting 172 going into the game. They were averaging 5 hits a game. They were averaging 2.57 runs per game. So I'm watching this game and it was 8-8. And I'm like, what the hell, man? this is Oracle Park and the Giants have a good pitching staff. Why the hell is Seattle scoring all these runs? In fact, I texted a friend of mine from Seattle. I said, what's going on? He's like, don't worry. It's not going to last. It did, but they did. As always, please, hi, Papa Jay, and thank you so much. Like and subscribe to both channels, John Lund Unleashed and Bay Area Sports Collective. So please, if you would do that, that would be amazing. So that's where we are, episode 107, Nuggets. The Warriors finally beat the Nuggets, 118-104. If you're late to the show, that's totally fine. We have talked about it, so you can either go back or in a little bit, when I put the chapters up there, you can go back and listen to our fine thoughts on the Warriors finally getting that win. Showed you the standings. Curry's at another level. Jimmy Butler has saved the season. They were 25-26, 20-5 now since Jimmy arrived. Verlander, not very good. Heard from Adamas on the game winner. Heard from Bob Melvin. Crazy game. Gave you the stuff from the clubhouse. So that's where we are as far as. And I did show you the standings in the NL West, which are a little different than the standings in the NBA right now. Just a little bit different. So anyway, there you go. Let's see. What else do we got? Anything else on the Warriors game or the Giants game yesterday? Like I said, I'm just kind of clicking through this quickly on a Saturday. Just wanted to get you up to date on everything. Yeah, I was over. You know, here's the thing. People were hitting me up on social media yesterday, like, where was I drinking at? I had to work yesterday. I wasn't drinking at all yesterday. I didn't have any cocktails. Like, I saw Pop and I said, I'm going to catch up with you later. And he was in the Gotham Club. He's like, come over to the Gotham Club. And I'm like, oh, like, I couldn't. I had to go in the clubhouse. I can't go in the clubhouse all wrecked, like walk in there. Hi, like Harry Carey. Hey, high fly ball to center field. Like, I can't do that. Can't walk in there. No, I was not in Portland when Bill Walton was there, although Bill came back a lot. And they have that one championship. And so it's almost like, you remember when the Warriors just won the one in 75 and we just embraced those players that way? In fact, the Warriors won it 2 years. Excuse me, Warriors. Blazers won it 2 years later in 77, and those guys are gods up there. Like, Maurice Lucas has passed away, but all those guys, you know, Jack Ramsey's passed away, Bill Walton passed away, but, I mean, when those guys were around and I was up there, I mean, those guys were gods. That was the only professional championship they ever had. It was just crazy. Just crazy. I know. I don't know if I could trademark boots on the ground, because I'm not the one who came up with it. I'm just saying, when it came to, like, J.D., John Dickinson doing all, you know, his stuff, I was the one who called him that, and everybody just like, hi, Jesus. Padres, Arizona Dodgers still better than the Giants, question mark. Look, you can't deny the Dodgers. As much as I want to, they're not better than the Dodgers, and I haven't seen a ton of the Padres. I've seen 2 Padres games so far. Great, by the way, Imanaga of the Cubs, when I didn't know he was going to be so good. My God, he was great last year. He was 15-3 with an ERA in the twos, and then he absolutely shut down the Padres. Was that yesterday or day before, whatever it was? They all run together. The Cubs might be decent this year. Like, the Padres are good. We need a little bit more time, but the Padres are good. I'd say the Padres and the Dodgers are better. But what I would say is that based on just what we know so far, the Giants can compete for a wild card. Winning a game like that, and that won't be the norm, but winning a game like that when Verlander struggles, bullpen's not great, and yet one thing that has always been consistent with the Giants, whether they're going to win a World Series like 10, 12, and 14 or just be in the mix, is that you got to get key hits. They're not going to score 10 runs on the regular. They're not going to score 5 runs on the regular, especially in this ballpark. So you've got to get great pitching, great relieving, and key hits. And last night, as you're sitting behind, like I said, I'm sitting behind home plate there in the media area, They were 6-for-28 with runners in scoring position. They'll probably not have one game this year, one game in which they have 28 runners left in scoring position, or just 28 runners in scoring position, period, in a game. And I know that thing went 11, but still, even through 9, they had like 22 runners in scoring position. They were like 5-of-22, I think, at one point. You can go back to my X at John Lund Radio on X, and you can see how many. Like, I'm just putting out all sorts of tweaks. Now they're 6-for-28. Now they're blah, 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 blah. I mean, it was brutal. But there you go. Willie Adames is up in the right time, as he said, and you saw, you know, he pokes one to right field, and they score two runs. By the way, having Tyler Fitzgerald on base at that point, thank you very much. I don't know how many players on the Giants would have scored. He got a great jump and scores on that ball. Now, it wasn't hit very hard, and it was going to be a really tough place to play, but I don't know how many players on the Giants would have scored in that situation like Tyler Fitzgerald did, because when he was barreling around third, I'm like, nah, he's in. He's got it. Yeah. I mean, that's the whole thing. Let's be honest with ourselves. The Dodgers, they're ridiculous. So, yeah, they're great. So you're going to have to play for a wild card. So how much it matters whether you're better than the Dodgers? Not very much. Are you better than, as you pointed out there, are you better than the Diamondbacks? Are you better than the Padres? Because now you're playing for wild card. Are you better than the Braves, the Phillies, whoever doesn't win in the East? Are you better than the Mets? Are you better than the Central just early on? And maybe I'm jaded because I went up and saw the Cubs just absolutely smoke the A's at Sutter Health on Wednesday. The Cubs look pretty good. And if they can get pitching, they're going to hit. They're going to score. Kyle Tucker's really good. They're going to score runs. But now you're dealing with the Cubs and the Cardinals and the Brewers and whomever's going to come out of the Central. Are you better than those teams? I think that's it. Did somebody say, was that a Mariah Carey or a Harry Carey? No, the Harry Carey one is. And by the way, I met Harry Carey at a spring training game one time. He's hilarious. And this is a true story. My uncle was an advertising exec with Budweiser. And you know that whole Cubs fan Bud man? He did, that was his deal. Hey, I'm a Cubs fan and a Bud man. And that was his deal. And that thing went forever. But I didn't want to be like Harry Carey. I'm sitting in the booth. Like, Harry Carey's sucking down Budweiser's. I've seen him do it during a game. And it's like, I can't do that. Like, I cannot do that. And plus, I'm walking into the clubhouse bombed. Yeah, they're like, dude, get out and never come back. Like, I'm not Harry Carey. I can't pull that off. I can't be Harry Carey. I can't be drunk. Can't go to the Gotham Club, suck down shots with Papa, and then go back and be like, hey, Justin, how come you suck today? What about 2012? You must hate this stadium. Like, get that guy out. He's done. Oh, man. No, that was good. That was good. That was a good day yesterday. What a fun day out of the park. The only other thing I'd say is, and again, I feel bad for the A's and their fans. It was like a spring training game. Like, going to a ballpark like yesterday, and I've been to just about every ballpark in the country. That place is special, man. And I make fun of it all the time because that's their baby, and that's where it's like, yeah, the star of our team is the turnstiles. The star of our team is the park. The star of our team is, I mean, that's a great baseball park, and that was fun yesterday. A lot of great fans. By the way, a lot of people coming up to me saying hello and that they listen and they watch, and so it was really cool. Just a really cool day yesterday. So anyway, off to a good start are the Giants, and they're back at it today. Couple other things before we get out of here, because like I said, we try to keep it to a tight hour on Saturday editions of the show from the clubhouse. So we've done all that stuff. We're down to QB tiers. This is kind of funny. The only reason I bring this up, I had this on my notes for a couple of days. The only reason I bring this up is because everybody talks about Brock's contract, and they talk about all the quarterbacks that are better. This is Chase Daniel, who held a clipboard in the NFL for, I don't know, 15 years and made like $50 million, which is like the most brilliant thing ever. So he's not going to be hurt coming out of his brain is totally intact. And this is how he looks at quarterbacks. So he's got Mahomes 1, no issue with that. Allen, Burrow, Jackson. That is tier 1, absolutely. And then he looks at tier 2 and he says Herbert, Stafford, Goff, Daniels. And he also puts Purdy. But he's putting these guys behind him. So I don't have a problem, even though Herbert hasn't completely proved it. His is all based on, he's just such a great athlete with a great arm. Stafford, no issue. Goff, he has to have perfect circumstances like Brock does. I'm hesitant to put Jaden Daniels in it so early because, and I guess I make this because it's Washington. You know, RG3 after his rookie year, everybody loved him and then kind of, it's going to be teams in that division are going to adjust to him. So Philly, Dallas, et cetera, are going to adjust to him, and then he's going to have to win, not in a different way. I'm not saying that. We're going to try to take away the best things that he does. So maybe he's just that good, but you can have a good rookie season, great rookie season in his case, where they go to the NFC Championship game, And then afterwards, they're going to just adjust on you. Look at C.J. Stroud. See him near the at the last player there? C.J. Stroud, after his rookie year, is what Jaden Daniels is right now. And I'm not saying C.J. Stroud isn't great, but his star dimmed a little bit in his second year. But it's because teams watch film, especially in his division, and say, okay, what does he love to do? Let's drill down really hard on him. Let's use an entire offseason because Houston's really good. And then you become a really big target. As a second overall pick and a rookie, people are like, how good is Jaden Daniels going to be? Oh, my God, he's really good. So second year, these defensive coordinators spend the entire offseason, especially the ones in your division, looking at the head of the snake going, okay, what do we got to do to slow this guy down? So Stroud was good last year. He just wasn't great like he was as a rookie. And Jaden Daniels is going to have to deal with that same thing. It's kind of like we talk about this all the time. The comp really to me is hitters in baseball. You go through the league one time, and it's like you're great. Then they find that hole, up, fastball up and in, fastball up and in, and it's just boom, 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 boom. And until you adjust to that, then you can struggle. So I'm not saying Jaden Daniels doesn't belong in tier two. I think it's a little too early. But what it more illustrates to me and why I bring this up to you is there's a clear tier one. But then these guys, Herbert has gotten paid. Stafford's gotten paid. Goff has gotten paid. Hurts has gotten paid. Dak has gotten paid. They've all gotten paid a boatload of money. So when people say to me, and Daniels and Stroud aren't eligible yet, so everybody who's eligible amongst those tiers, and Brock deserves to be in it, has gotten paid big time. So why do people still say that he's not going to get paid? Like, I agree 100%. He's not in tier one. Those four are the best quarterbacks in the league. But after that, honestly, number five is in the eye of the beholder, and it really changes Sunday to Sunday. Like, Brock, honestly, could be the fifth best quarterback in the league on any given Sunday, but he could also be 10th or 15th. That's why as you look at beyond the top four, it's a crapshoot. I mean, Herbert at times, physically, Herbert is an amazing athlete with a rifle for an arm, but sometimes he doesn't play that well. Sometimes Matthew Stafford trusts his arm too much and throws interceptions on a given day. Sometimes Jared Goff is not in a comfortable dome and he just isn't nearly as good. He has to have perfect circumstances. Jalen Hurts sometimes just doesn't see it. You're like, what is this guy looking at? You kidding me? Dak Prescott a lot of times can't stay healthy and he does dumb stuff. So, well, the top four generally, Mahomes, Allen, Burrow, Jackson on any given Sunday, they're pretty good. They're a reason why their team wins. After that, Brock could be five, Brock could be 15. But he's getting paid because everybody else on that list right there that is eligible to be paid, so Daniels isn't, Stroud isn't, they've all gotten paid. Herbert's gotten paid a ton. Stafford's over the years paid a ton, just extended. Jared Goff, extended. Jalen Hurts, lots of money. Like, they're all over, 52 to 55 and more in that second tier. First tier, whatever. But that second tier, all those guys gotten paid that are eligible to get paid. He's getting paid. So anyway, just wanted to bring that up real quick. Did I have anything else? Oh, this one. Let me bring this up, NFL related. I thought this was a prank. I double checked to make sure that this was actually true. So Trey Lance is going to be the third quarterback, hopefully make that team with the Chargers. The irony is with Trey Lance going to the Chargers, if you remember this, I was covering training camp down there in Santa Clara, and there were whispers. This is Trey as a rookie. Not even kidding. It sounds silly right now. But as a rookie, with Jimmy and Trey in camp, people were like, Trey might be able to start. Trey's that good. Like, Trey's looking really, really good. He had confidence. He looked good. They weren't asking him to do a ton. And Trey's not stupid. He knew the book. He just couldn't execute it after a while. But Trey, there were actual rumors that and whispers, I should say, in camp that, like, Trey's out playing Jimmy in camp when he was a rookie. And he might play. And he might play sooner rather than later. And he might beat Jimmy out. And then they go down a few weeks into training camp, and they go down to the Chargers joint practices in LA, and Trey didn't have a clue. Didn't have a clue. Couldn't see it. Lost confidence. I was down there. He threw some balls that were like, where's that ball going? Is he nuke-a-louche? Like, what is he doing? And from that point forward, his confidence waned. The team's confidence in him fell off. Like, just a few weeks into camp, he might beat Jimmy Garoppolo out when they were just practicing with the Niners. And remember, that was a really good defense that he's going up against. I don't know if it was just whatever the case may be, but then he goes down to the Chargers and they were throwing some different looks at him. I know that Kyle had asked the Chargers at that point to throw a couple of different looks at Trey just to kind of get him to some different things. And he was a deer in headlights and he looked horrible and he never really recovered. Honestly, never really recovered. So the irony of him going to the Chargers, which really was his downfall as a rookie and never, honestly, never really recovering from those practices, and I believe losing his confidence, he goes to the Chargers. I don't know about you. Maybe you just don't care about him anymore. Maybe it's just like, that's so long gone. And we've talked so much about why the 49ers had to purge, right? Well, in 2022, they didn't have a first-round pick. Why? Trey Lance. In 2023, didn't have a first-round pick. Why? Trey Lance. So those guys, you know, we wonder, and I said this the other day, the reason why the 49ers have had to purge to this point, look at 22 and 23 drafts. Those are the guys that are supposed to be cheap labor that are starting. No first-round pick in 22. Drake Jackson stinks. Ty Davis Price, not around. Danny Gray, third round, not around. Burford stinks. Womack, not around. Zakel, whatever. Kalia Davis, Castro Fields never even made it. And you got Purdy to not save the draft. Then you go to 2003. Jair Brown, definite question mark at free safety. Moody, please. Latu, third round pick. Luter Jr. has been injured. Beal's done nothing. Winners got a chance. Willis, nothing. Bell gone. Graham got a chance. They got Brock Purdy out of those drafts. That was it. And I'm not saying that alone Trey Lance was the measure of that whole thing, but you didn't have a first rounder in 22 and 23. Those 22 and 23 first round picks are supposed to be players that are still playing under rookie contracts and are playing at a high level, and you're missing those guys. So you can't bomb in two consecutive drafts outside of Brock Purdy in those two drafts that were headlined by trading your first round picks because of Trey Lance and think that you're going to be up with the Eagles and the Packers and the Rams and the Lions. You can't bomb two straight drafts. Now, 24 is a step in the right direction, but my God, man. And I don't want to blame this guy completely, but those first round picks that he cost you, that would have been okay if he'd have been an absolute great player, but he cost you those picks and he stunk. So when everybody says, well, Brock Purdy saved him, well, he did to a point, but those two drafts illustrate why they are where they are and why they had to purge the way they had to purge, because they're super hot. They're really top heavy. They have guys down here making nothing. They don't have this guy, you know, in the prime of his career, not making very much. So they have to purge because of it. But having said all those things, and this is where I'm asking you the question, I'd love to see Trey succeed. I don't know how, and you and I have talked about this a million times. There's no way to develop a quarterback and give him time. The Chargers can't give Trey Lance a bunch of time. You know, Jim Harbaugh is on the second year of his deal. He's trying to rebuild that team. He's got, you know, Justin Herbert has another step to take. He's got to get that thing rolling. Now, he's taking a flyer and seeing if Trey's got anything. Why the hell was he picked third? There's got to be something there, right? But then he went to Dallas and they did the same thing and they gave up a fourth round pick for him. They're like, there's got to be something there. What the hell? What's going on here? And they didn't re-sign him. And remember, they lost Cooper Rush to Baltimore, and they just said they didn't even try to sign Trey Lance. And they needed a backup with a quarterback coming off a major, major injury, and they're like, no, we're good. And so the Chargers went, well, there had to be a reason he was taken third. Let's just see. Let's just bring him in and see what the heck's going on. So, look, it's a massive long shot. I don't think he's going to do anything with his career, and I feel bad about it. I don't know how you can develop a quarterback like Trey who had very little experience, but they're going to try to do something with him, because they're going to pick him up and see. Yeah, maybe he's going to be the tush-push quarterback, although, like I said, what's Herbert, 6'5", 240? I mean, if they wanted to do tush-push, they could just do with that dude, you know? So anyway, there you go. Yeah, I'd agree with you there, Pine. Goff is a statue. That's why when they played him in the NFC Championship game, their whole thing was get him off the point, get him off the point, get him off the point, because if he has to move or he's in any kind of conditions that aren't a dome, he's okay. He's just not great. Hi, East Bay Caesar. You know, here's the thing. I hope I can get him back on. We had a great conversation, lots of hugging, bro hugging and stuff with him yesterday. Had some sweet sunglasses on. But now that we've become Bay Area Sports Collective, in addition to, they think that's a threat. And so they have kind of cut us off from the guys. So we'll see. I don't know. Is Pauly still bringing on Murph? Is Pauly Mack still bringing on Murph every Monday? I don't know. But I just know that that they've kind of told us without telling us that maybe they wouldn't let him come on again. But we'll see. Let's see. I let my wife kidnap me for my 40th birthday. And I got you in the car headed to the Bay Area. Very nice. Very nice. On in the car. Oh, on in the car. Where are you guys going? Is she telling you anything, Kyle? Wait a minute. This is big news. What's going on here? Where is she taking you? Give me more information on this. Even if there's not enough time today on the show, you've got to pop back in here. Your wife kidnapped you for your 40th birthday, and I got you on in the car headed to the Bay Area. Do you have any idea? What are you doing? What's going on? Boy, that's, how did I miss that? How did I miss that? I'm looking at the chat line all the time. How did I miss that? Yeah, tell me what's going on here. Give us an update. I don't see an update from you after that. Did she allow you one text? Okay, you get one text. You get one text. Oh, no, there you are. I see you again there. Okay, where is your wife taking you? I don't see this. I'm not following along. I don't know where I'm going. Oh, okay. Says he doesn't know where he's going. What time was that? That was 11. Oh, that was 15 minutes ago. Wow. I need to know. I need an update. Yeah, I don't have an update from him. The last one I have, 11:24, I have one from him. Oh, geez. Yeah, there you go. By the way, yeah, the pregame ceremony, there he is. The pregame ceremony with Bonds and John Miller. And I mean, it 25th anniversary. I got one of those pins, actually. They gave me a pin somewhere on this whole thing. But the 25th anniversary thing. The funniest thing, I forgot about this. The funniest thing from yesterday, and did they show the pregame ceremony on TV? I don't know. But the funniest thing from the pregame ceremony yesterday was they show Verlander warming up in the bullpen. And John Miller says, and he's got the podium and the microphone from the mound or whatever. And he says, he brings up Pablo's two home runs against Verlander in the 2012 World Series. And they show Verlander warming up in the bullpen. It was classic. John Miller is so great. That was incredible. Just incredible, man. Very, very cool. Oh, okay. All right, EB. Okay. All right. Man, very cool, man. Very cool. All right. So maybe that's where you're going. Let us know. Let us know where you're going. All right. What else do we got? Anybody else? Anybody else? Going once, going twice, going three times. All right. Everybody have a tremendous. Did Krug get smashed yesterday? You know what's funny? I tuned into that show at times because, like I said, I got 19 things in front of me. And he was doing draft talk. He had three other guys in there. We're going to do that. We're going to do the bottom of the pint every single Friday from now on. I wanted to go to opening day. I had some business things to take care of in the city. And so I went to opening day and wanted to provide all that content for you guys. So that's why I went to opening day. But from now on, I will be at Krug and I will be doing the bottom of the pint show for every Friday during the game. So make sure. But I tuned in during the game to see what Krug was doing, if he was sucking down beers, talking about baseball, whatever. And he had two other guys in there with him. And he had a draft board. And they were doing like a draft in which they drafted like 20 guys. And so I laughed. But I will be there. Is today National Deep Dish Pizza Day? Is that true? Is that true, JP from the 510? Are you pulling my leg on that? Is that true? Do I have to look that up? Zachary's is solid. My parents are from Chicago, so I am a I wouldn't say I'm a deep dish snob. That's not true at all. But I do love deep dish pizza. And if it is deep dish pizza day, hold on just a second. Let me make sure that that's true. What is today? There's a Zachary's right by me, which it's not, it's not Giordano's or anything like that, but in Chicago, but it's pretty good. National Deep Dish Pizza Day. JP from the 510, you are a god. Yeah. How did I miss that? There you go. You like there it is. National Deep Dish Pizza Day. What do you think of deep dish pizza? Let's end on this note. Today is National Deep Dish Pizza Day. And if JP from the 510 wouldn't have said that, I wouldn't have known. What do you like? How do you like your pizzas? Thin crust? Sicilian style? I lived in Detroit. I don't understand the Detroit whole thing where they put all this toppings and then they put the sauce and everything over the top. Wasn't my thing. Was not my thing. And it had like it was a square pizzas and stuff. So my folks grew up in Chicago. They'll eat the deep dish. They like it, but it's almost so decadent. You know what I mean? Where it's so deep that like you eat one piece and you're like, I would have rather had like four or five thin crust pieces. But like I said, Zachary does a pretty good job, but it is National Deep Dish Pizza Day. And I do like it, but it's almost like eating a piece, like, people call it a pie. It's almost like eating some pie and then you eat one deep dish pizza piece and it's really good. I love it, but it's like, man, I guess that's it. Like, that's all I'm having. Wow, fine. All due respect, is bread with some tomato. Give me some New York thin crust. See, but everybody's different. Like I said, I wouldn't eat Chicago deep dish every time I ate pizza. That wouldn't be what I would do. But let's say that, somebody said, hey, want to get some deep dish? I'd do it. I'm with you, though, on the thin crust, New York style, that kind of stuff. I'm not a Detroit style kind of a guy. There's a couple of really nice Italian joints that do a real nice, legit Sicilian Italian style pie that are nice. Just a basic margarita or something like that. So good. In fact, I'm going to do that now. I'm going to go do that right now. I'm going to have pizza for lunch Absolutely, I'm going to do that. All right. Great time had by all today. Thank you, thank you, thank you for making the time on a Saturday. I'm not going to make you sit here all day long. We've done about an hour and 25 minutes today. Remember, a couple of things. It's all I ask for all this fine entertainment value. Make sure that you have subscribed on John Lund Unleashed on YouTube. Please, if you would today, please give us a thumbs up. That helps the algorithm. That would mean a lot to us. So make sure you do that. Have your alerts on because we do shows. If news breaks, things like that, we absolutely will do shows there. We always put out extra pieces of content off of the show. So please make sure you have those alerts on for that. Please also, if you have not subscribed, because I've got about 5,300 subscribers, and thank you so much for that. We want to keep growing that number, but the Bay Area Sports Collective is not at that number. So if you're subscribed here, just subscribe there. Tom's show's there. Pauly Mack's show is there, along with Creative Tony. So make sure, because then you'll know all of them. Plus, we're going to be adding shows and everything like that. So make sure that you're in the know. So hit us up in both of those places on YouTube, John Lund Unleashed, Bay Area Sports Collective. Thank you for watching on X today at John Lund Radio. If you're following along on a game or something like that, that's where I put most of my social media things. So like yesterday, if you went to my X at John Lund Radio, not my X, my X page, don't go to my X. But if you go to my X page during the games, that's where I'm putting a lot of the stuff. So you can check that stuff out there. And then I put it on YouTube, but I do in real time, I put a lot of stuff on X. Watch it on Facebook today, John Lund and John Lund Unleashed. You can hit us up there as well. And I think that is it, unless there is something new. And as Papa Jay says, please subscribe to both channels. That would be absolutely positively great. Really appreciate it. Yeah. Lose is actually, that's the one. Jimmy Garoppolo is the one. I think it was a Bears game. That's his favorite. My parents have a different one, but yeah, that's excellent pizza. I mean, it's just absolutely great. Thank you, JP from the Fun 510. Thank you. Thank you. And thank you for letting us know it was National Deep Dish Pizza Day. Much appreciated on that front as well. So there you go. All right, everybody have a great Saturday. If I don't speak with you before then, we'll see you Monday morning at 8 a.m., Monday through Friday, 8 a.m. to 10 a.m. Saturdays, we do a quickie, although it wasn't as quickie today, but Saturdays, we do a quickie on Saturdays at 10 a.m. to just get you caught up on everything. Remember, follow along, subscribe at John Lund Unleashed, Bay Area Sports Collective, X, it's at John Lund Radio, as well as Instagram if you hit us up there as well. I will always get back to you on questions, comments, thoughts. You can do it right under the show right here or hit me up a little bit later, or also questions, comments, thoughts at John Lund Radio on X. Everybody, have a great Saturday afternoon. I will speak at you later or at the worst, Monday morning at 8.
Thanks for hanging out with John Lund Unleashed. We'll try to be better next time, though I wouldn't hold my breath. Please like and subscribe on the John Lund Unleashed Pod YouTube channel. Watch live shows weekdays at 8 a.m. on YouTube, Instagram, and X. And make sure to have your alerts on for shows throughout the day or night. All things Lund can be found at johnlundunleashed.com. johnlundunleashed.com.
Goodbye!